See, I've been waiting. Waiting on that time. Feel me if you've been waiting on yours. That moment, it's close. It's close.
Yeah. Tired of living day to day like everything's alright. Just waiting on that moment. Waiting on my moment.
And that time is now, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Fighter's Block. My name is Joe Gilpin, joined as always by my co-host, the king of Salvadorian strong style, Mr. Jesse Rivas. How you doing this week, Jesse?
Doing fantastic. Oh my God. I love the fact that no matter where you go on the planet, you can just go to the bar, put on the UFC, and you'll find a ton of like-minded people. I hope it never fully goes mainstream.
It's fun. It's a weird, like, chimp response that everybody has. You know what I mean? I've always said there's three things that anybody can look at and with no training tell if you're good or bad at them. Maybe four things. Dancing, fighting, sex, and maybe comedy, too, right?
Yeah.
So,
which, by the way, there's three things I've said that all men on the planet overestimate their ability to be able to do.
This is quickly turning into us being Steve Harvey, but let's continue.
I constantly see guys that think that they're funnier than they really are. The most annoying ones are the ones that laugh at their own jokes.
Sure. I feel like, personally attacked.
And they roll up to you and they're like, hey, what's up, Joe? With the flow? Oh! And you're like, why did you even laugh at that?
Yeah, you should be allowed to hit those people with chairs. I agree with you.
There's the guy who believes that he could fight better than he really does. You know that guy. Man.
That's fucking everybody. Every guy has an idea about what he would do in a street fight. And it's all, like, so much more complicated and technical than any street fight's ever been. It's like, no, man, I got this jab I've been working on. You know, I'm going to keep him at range and then throw sand in his eyes. And then when there's sand in his eyes, I'm going to take him out at the Achilles tendons. That's my game plan.
My friend introduced me to her date. And she told her date that I have a podcast. He said, what is it about? MMA. He's like, psh. That shit wouldn't really work. Like, if somebody tried to do that jiu-jitsu or that wrestling stuff, I would just kick them. I did kickboxing growing up.
Oh, somebody should have thought about that. Man, you can make billions. Billions. Actually, that's kind of John Jones's plan.
If someone tried to take me down, I would just kick them. I'm like, what if someone tried to punch you? Kick them. Like, that was his response to everything. I'm like, do you still train? He's like, no, I haven't trained in like 5 years. I'm like, did you ever compete?
You should have whipped his ass. You should have just like fucking thrown him down right there. So
I really, and then the third I think is sex.
Everybody knows who's good at fucking and who's not.
Everyone, ask any dude. Oh, I tore that up, man. I destroyed it. Oh man, she couldn't even walk the next day. Interview the girl afterwards. Let's see what she really says.
Well, have you ever seen a girl at a job who's, like, limping around like, oh, boy, sorry, I just really got it last night? Like, ever one time out in the real world have you seen a girl like, wow, she got fucked. She really got fucked last night. Never once.
I've seen a few guys walk like that, but that's neither here nor there.
That's neither here nor there. Over the weekend, John Jones beat the heck out of Anthony Smith. It was one of those very down John Jones performances where you think he looks like shit, but then you realize he won everything about the fight, the striking, the grappling, every single round. It's a dominant decision win. The scorecards ended up being kind of tight, kind of like everybody in John Jones' corner, asshole, because he need Anthony Smith in the head. Anthony Smith says, fuck that, I'm not taking a DQ win and the title. I want this straight up. Continues to get his ass beat for another 5 minutes, but that's neither here nor there. Jesse, this is
soccer kicked them before that.
That was on the hand. That wasn't going to get called. I think that was just on the hand. And Herb Dean took 2 points. I swear to God, right before he kneed him, I called it. I said he's going to fucking knee him in the head. And he fucking did it. I love you, John Jones. I love how much of an asshole this guy is.
Would you have taken the disqualification victory?
Oh, fuck yes. Are you kidding me? I would have. That's good money. Vegas was having a stroke. Casino owner Sheldon Adelson is, like, about to die. If Anthony Smith had stayed down, he would have died that night. There's no doubt in my mind. Because they would have lost so much money. Of course I would have. Him doing that is the most honorable thing in UFC history.
I can just think of Anthony Durrell at that moment and all the times where times got rough and things got a little bit edgy and he just like rolled on the ground like he was dying. As soon as he was declared a winner, he just pops up and then takes a few days off or whatever. But like, he could have easily done that. He could have easily taken the coward's road. I mean, can you imagine if Anthony Smith had just stayed down, then his uncle or grandfather just walks in there and just cold cocks John Jones in a big riot.
Oh my God. There was so much weird family stuff between that and the senior Miss Usman. The family stuff was off the chain. But yeah, Anthony Smith, just goddamn, I have so much respect for what that guy did. And John Jones is so fucking stupid. The referee takes two points, which is the new rule.
What was it, Charles? Oh my God, what was the name? King Charles. The guy who beat, who lost the title to Anthony Joshua.
Oh, I forget off the top of my head. I'm sorry.
But I would have done one of his promos. You remember when he won because his opponent's knee just exploded in the middle of the ring? And he barely
Charles
hit the
Washington?
Guy,
no, not Charles Washington.
And then he cut this promo about, like, this will be working hard for. We've been setting him up this whole fight.
It was shameful. Thankfully, it didn't come to that. John Jones just continues to clean out this division.
Charles Martin.
And is a move to heavyweight next? Is maybe like Thiago Santos next? Are we a fight or two away from Johnny Walker, who was on the undercard coming through and being that guy? What do you see?
I think he's the Thiago Santos fight, and then he needs to move up to heavyweight.
Johnny Walker is muy bueno. Let's say that. He had another fight. Here's a crazy, crazy stat about Johnny Walker right now. If you have like a 1-to-100 knockout to strike ratio, so for like every 100 strikes you throw, somebody gets knocked out one time, that's great, right? Like that's pretty heavy handed.
Mm-hmm.
50-to-1 is awesome. That's, you know, not even Robbie Lawler hits that hard. Right now, Johnny Walker, 9-to-1. For every 9 strikes he throws, somebody gets knocked out in the UFC. How unbelievable is that?
Wow.
I mean, it's just absolutely crazy. So this guy, they're going to fast track him like crazy. But yeah, John Jones to heavyweight has got to be the move. Especially when you look at, I mean, not for nothing, Daniel Cormier is on top of heavyweight. And John Jones spent a lot of time on top of Daniel Cormier. I don't see how they can get away with it.
You know who spent a lot of time on top of somebody this weekend?
Who? Was it you? Are congratulations in order? Viva. Jesse Reeves.
I was going to say Kamaru Usman over Tyron Woodley.
Oh, for sure. He rode him like a cheap whore. Tyron Woodley did not show up to fight. Kamaru Usman did. We kind of said and predicted it here last week that this is going to be a really, really tough fight for both guys. But Usman was just a level up and a level ahead. Tyron didn't look good, and I think that's because of Kamaru. I don't think that's because of Tyron. What do you think?
No, I think it's 100% because of Usman, because there was a point in time where I saw Tyron Woodley do all he could possibly do, and he was stunned. He just couldn't do anything. Like
It really is just that.
The ref was even on his side. Remember when the referee stood them up for no apparent reason?
Yeah, people have been getting on Goddard for that so much. I don't know. I don't give a shit. Thankfully, it didn't change the end of the fight. And he only stood them up once and separated them twice from a clinch. It's not like he was on them all night, so I don't want that to become kind of the understanding for everybody. Tyron looked horrible. Something I think that can't be overstated leading up in this training camp, Tyron was working out a lot with who? Ben Askren. Did Tyron overtrain because he has to be in there every single day with this monster who usually isn't on the same schedule as him? Did he leave really good rounds in the training facility? Something to think about, Jesse. What do you think?
And he was opening up for Wiz Khalifa, so we can't forget that.
Sure, so who's not going to be sleepy you spend time around Wiz Khalifa? He's on the strange clouds, Jesse. Usman is... no way is Tyron going to fight Usman next, right? There's absolutely no way.
No.
I mean, Tyron has been historically overlooked as a champion. He didn't have a big drawing power. Even here, he's just in the co-main event. I'd be amazed if he got the rematch. It's probably going to be Usman Covington, or it could be Usman Askren. What do you think?
I think both of those are very good opportunities. I would love to see Usman versus Askren, especially since he calls him Marty Usman because that's what he went as in college. And for whatever reason, it really pisses off Kamaru Usman to be called Marty.
It's like some weird "your name is Toby" thing going on.
It is. It is.
Straight up is. I'm not saying that as a joke. Like, that is 100% what he feels like it is. Like, he is using his slave name. I bet Kamaru Usman shares a lot of memes on Facebook that are, like, kind of Hotep-y, you know what I mean? About, like, Beethoven was secretly black and all this kind of stuff. Those are my favorite. I love, every once in a while, I'll see something on Facebook that, like, Haywood Turnipseed liked, and I just, like, it's always something like, did you know Russia was secretly made of black folks or something? Like, it's the best.
Yeah, like, every St. Patrick's Day, no matter how much this has been proven to be just an internet meme and not true, they'll say, did you know that leprechauns were originally black and that it wasn't snakes that were pushed out of Ireland? It was the black people in Ireland that were pushed out of Ireland.
Yeah, that's literally just something that, like, Russ Green made up when he was high one time. Like, that's, yeah, it's like, not that's, rooted in fact.
It's just a meme. But, like, there's no bearing at all to history. There's no facts. But it got shared enough times where people were like, that sounds like something that happened.
Speaking of dumb racist shit, Colby Covington is now not allowed back in, I think it's the Palms Casino, because after the fight, he tried to sucker punch Kamaru and then hid behind an old lady. This guy's such a fucking heel. I love it. I can't help but, like...
So that's why Kamaru tried to attack him, like, the next time he saw him.
Yes.
There's that video of, like, him and, like, they're going, they're, like, yelling at him, and he's, like, hiding behind an old lady. He's like, there's women here. There's women and children here.
What a fucking just honky-tonk chicken shit heel. Usman versus Covington. It's a good thing about having somebody in the division like Covington that everybody hates is you can plug him in with everybody, and the story doesn't have to change. He was going to say weird racist shit to Tyron. He's going to say weird racist shit to Kamaru. And Kamaru is going to be... How about this? Kamaru's beating of Tyron Woodley is the biggest Nigerian whooping since the Jussie Smollett case. How about that? Let's talk about this feature fight. Ben Askren, Robbie Lawler. Did you think he was out?
No.
Man, I don't know that I agree. And you know,
I thought so at first when I first saw it, but I thought, like, all right, maybe he was out for a second, and then he got his bearings and then immediately came back. And it's kind of like when boxers don't know they got knocked out, but like the turnaround was so quick because Robbie's such a tough ass dude. But he puts a thumbs up. He does the whole thumbs up from the other angle. And I tend to believe him a little bit where he says he was just kind of like letting Askren burn his arms out.
How about we put it this way? Couple of things. In my opinion, was the choke... I think he had enough of a choke. It's important to remember that going out isn't, like, a binary thing. It's not on and off. You can kind of gray out over time. And I think that might be what happened, is he was kind of, like, getting there. You know, maybe he hits 100%, but not really. And kind of grayed out, and that's why the hand dropped. And, you know, he can still kind of move it a little. I've been in that situation. It's not fun, but it does happen. Was he intelligently defending himself, Jesse Rivas?
No.
No, straight up no. I think it is maybe a good stoppage, maybe a bad stoppage. I think it's an understandable stoppage from Herb Dean. If you let an arm go limp when you're in a submission, especially a choke, I think you should expect to get the fight stopped. And I think Lawler is smart enough to know that. He's borderline illiterate, but he knows that much, Jesse.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just an unfortunate situation. I wish they had let it. I mean, at a split second like that, there's nothing you could do. I wish they had let it, like, go a little longer.
I yelled at my TV. I was watching it with a world champ wrestler. It was cool. But we were yelling at the TV, he's out, he's out. So I totally understood in the moment why Herb stopped it.
Yeah, I completely get it. And, I mean, it was crazy because it's funny because, like, I went there and I watched it with a bunch of people who've only known the UFC universe. They don't know anything about college wrestling. They don't know anything about Bellator or ONE Championship or any of these other feds, the World Series of Fighting. So when Ben Askren showed up there, people were like, who the fuck is this guy with the dad bod? He came in there.
Is this guy like filling in tonight? Like they found a janitor? Who the fuck is this?
And it was funny because it was like me and this random dude were like the only guys at the bar being like, no, trust us. This guy's really good. So
and then in the first fucking 10 seconds, he gets F5'd.
Oh, man. You should have seen the way people were looking at me when they were like, that guy's good.
Yo, and what about that slam, though?
The what?
What about the slam at the beginning? People had to be going nuts for that.
Especially because we're building him. He's like, he's an unbelievable wrestler. So when he got a hold of him, we're like, oh, it's over. Once he touches him, oh.
Small problem. And now he's getting punched in the fucking head. But he showed himself to be a super tough person. I don't care who the fuck you are. Robbie Lawler doing that to you. You have a chin and you are tough. That is some tough real motherfucker shit. And I kind of question this about Ben Askren. I was wrong. Ben Askren is totally fine as far as it comes to being able to take a punch and keep fighting.
You know, after seeing this fight, I still say give it to Colby. Because Colby is the interim champion, and I think it's wrong that he didn't get the title shot against Woodley.
I agree. Usman versus Covington is the fight. They gave him the interim belt. That means something. It needs to. And Askren can go fight Darren Till or Jorge Masvidal, both of whom I think are fucking... I think Ben is a great style matchup for either one of those guys. I think he just ragdolled both of them. What do you think? I think Robbie was like one of the worst style matchups in the division. I think he's a great style matchup against Kamaru and Covington, for that matter.
I would love to see him against Wonderboy. I think that's a tough matchup for Askren.
I think Dos Anjos is a horrible matchup for Askren. I think that might be really interesting.
Speaking of horrible matchup and horrible decision, did you see
Jeremy Stephens get robbed?
Yes.
Crazy. I thought he was clearly ahead. I gave him 2-1, and I didn't see the controversy around that. You know, sometimes you can kind of tell, hey, this is going to be really close, one way or the other. But Jeremy landed a ton of great shots on Zabit. Zabit looked good in flashes, but just couldn't put it together long term, and it really had to be very choosy about how he was approaching his offense. I think that really flustered him, and I thought Jeremy Stephens definitely deserved a decision.
Yeah, it's messed up.
How is Jeremy Stephens training with Dominic Cruz? He doesn't know anything about cutting off the cage. He doesn't know fucking thing one about footwork. And he trains with Dominic Cruz. I guess maybe it kind of explains itself. Like, they've had to adapt to each other's styles so much. It's like this weird Galapagos effect. But it's so fucking frustrating, Jesse. I think he's literally like 15-15 in the UFC. Learn to fucking cut a cage.
It sucks for him, especially since he's a 32-year-old veteran. He's been a gatekeeper since he was 21 years old. I mean, it's just tough to see this Jeremy Stephens go through this, but they're building up Zabit versus Yair Rodriguez. That's the fight they're building up for some apparent reason.
I mean, they're both big, spinny, tall dudes. I think it's interesting style matchups both ways. But I don't think Zabit answers the questions that I want answered about Yair, which is still how is he going to take on a Frankie Edgar-style wrestler? Has he learned anything from there?
Well, you know what I feel like this fight is that they're building up? It's kind of like when they had Karate Hottie versus Paige Van Zandt. Like, they knew neither one of those girls was going to beat Joanna. But we still wanted to see it and have them kind of have like a collision course towards each other.
I can fuck with it. I'm not mad as Zabit versus Yair fight. I just think there's other fights stylistically that would be really interesting.
I think it's more like of a collision course they want us to see. But we know that it's not going to be for a belt.
For sure. Never in a million years. Speaking of never for a belt, how the fuck did Mickey Gall lose to Diego Sanchez? Jesse, I'm so glad I didn't bet this fight. I would have lost my house. Mickey Gall needs to go. I'm sorry, Mickey, I love you so much. You gotta go. You are not ready for the UFC if you're losing to Diego Sanchez in the year 2019 of our Lord. It just doesn't work like that. Diego can get his lights turned out by a clapper. What are we doing? How did Mickey Gall lose this fight, Jesse?
Wrestling, apparently.
Yeah, the wrestling helped, but I mean, Mickey's supposed to be really good on the ground. Diego kept good pace, had good pressure, but the fact that Mickey Gall wasn't able to offer that serious resistance, I thought was really, really damning. And Diego Sanchez walks away with a win. And the frustrating part is now you know he's going to turn that into more fights down the road. You kind of almost wish that he gets knocked out horribly once and says, like, I'm done. This is over.
It was a damn good win. I was a fan. He brought back the Diego Sanchez of old, the relentlessness, the meanness, the ruggedness, the grit. It was everything that you love Diego Sanchez for.
It was old school, you know. But if you want old school Diego, go watch old school Diego. I'm so nervous that this is then going to lead to three no names planting Diego Sanchez on his face here in 2019 and 2020. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't.
Has he lost to no names? I think he's still losing to like the top guys.
No, he's still. I would have to pull up Diego Sanchez. See, I don't even know their names. That's how no named they are. He beat that Andrew Martin kid. I think that was that guy's name. But he still definitely is dropping weird ones and ones to other older guys. Are we defending Diego Sanchez? Is Diego Sanchez having a comeback? Am I missing something?
He's a fun fighter now. He's on the Arturo Gatti tour. We're going to see him take crucial butt whoopings by decent fighters, but we're also going to see him kind of clean house and get rid of the Mickey Gall type people. I like him at 170. I'm interested to see him against, like, I'd be interested to see him against Kamaru Usman.
You want to see him in there with Kamaru Usman getting that title shot?
I would love to see that fight.
Stop trolling, Jesse. you're trying to finally book Kamaru into a knockout win. I see behind the bullshit. You're finally trying to book him.
I think Diego finally wins the title.
You think Diego finally gets himself over the hump? Yeah, I guess his losses aren't too awful, but he's also only getting booked with guys like that. Losing to Ally Kenta, Matt Brown, Joe Lozon, Ricardo Lamas, Miles Jury, Gil Melendez, Jake Ellenberger. Diego, you break my heart. The guy you could have been. Tisha Torres drops a decision to Wiley Zhang. Wiley looks great. Her grappling is on point. She brings a ton of pressure. She is definitely on some steroids. But she powers herself over to a win over the Tiny Tornado, Tisha Torres. What'd you think, Jesse? Our girl, friend of the podcast, Tisha Torres, losing a fight.
This was the most boring fight of the entire night. I was about to fall asleep. Wiley won, but like, I don't know if I ever want to see her again. She's got to show me more than this in the next fight, because I am like as enthusiastic as seeing a John Fitch fight.
She's good with like weird spinning shit, but only when her opponent's like 6 feet away and it has no chance of landing. You know what I mean? Like, she's good at the movement of it. She's good at the kata. She can't fucking land it. So who gives a shit? Somebody used to have that problem was Cowboy Cerrone would throw really cool hook kicks and spin kicks and shit. But the guy would be on the other side of the fucking octagon by the time he finished the movement.
I had in a fist fight like that when I was a kid once. Like, at the opening of, like, the fight, the kid did, like, these two spinning roundhouse, like jumping Power Ranger type kicks. They looked really impressive. But then by the time I got close, we just started punching like normal people, and he never threw another kick, and it always bothered me.
What were you thinking when this kid was spin kicking?
I was like, oh, shit.
This is not what I had hoped.
But it was always like that. It was like from several feet away. Once we got close, it was just a regular fist fight.
Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. Beat that weird karate kid's ass.
He did powerbomb a kid once, but I was too fat at the time, so I knew I wasn't going to be eligible for the powerbomb, but he did powerbomb a kid once.
This is tactical girth to prevent this exact situation. This is like when Kevin Nash tried to powerbomb the Big Show and fucking blew out both of his quads.
That was the
weirdest fight. Go on, bitch, your move.
Because he powerbombed the kid in the driveway.
Who is this kid with this moveset of powerbombs and spinning hook kicks?
Who the fuck is this weirdo?
What is he doing now? Where is he, like a bank manager? And like, he's just out there like, yeah, I used to powerbomb kids. If not, I'm back up. Throw this the 360 question mark kick. Really let him have it.
So we're 10 years old, and he got in this fist fight with this other kid, and he powerbombs him in the driveway. and the kid gets knocked unconscious because power bombs in real life are super dangerous.
Yes.
But it's a real fist fight. He forced them into a power bomb. It wasn't like a, oh, we're play wrestling. They were in a real fist fight. They started grappling. The dude went for a takedown. He power bombs the kid. And then the kid is knocked out. That's the first time all of our 10-year-old asses have seen a knocked out person. So one person yells, oh, shit, he's dead. So we all run and scatter like roaches because for whatever reason we think we're involved in something bad and we go and hide.
Oh, for some reason. Some kid's fucking bleeding out in the driveway and you go hide. It's understandable. That's not the weird part of the story.
It was the 90s.
You're burying the lead.
So then eventually the kid gets up slowly and then we just walk up to him and be like, are you okay? You know, we thought you were dead, so we all ran away.
Damn, that is a lesson in loyalty for that kid that is waking up. That is.
But yeah, he did 3 spinning hook kicks in our fight way before I got close to him, so that was the moral of the story. That's more excitement than we saw in the Tisha Torres fight.
That story is better than we're going to get for that, but thankfully the fight right before that was mega entertaining. And this one almost had like a weird like powerbomb kind of thing. Pedro Munhoz came out and tried a jumping heel hook, or I guess it was a jumping Achilles lock right off the bat. They end up getting into some crazy slugging exchanges, hooks aplenty. Pedro Munhoz comes up out of a duck and headbutts Cody Garbrandt. Cody Garbrandt goes down, comes back up looking to swing. They're connecting on each other. Pedro puts down Cody before Cody can put down Pedro, and that's the fight. Pedro wins it by knockout in the first. Cody Garbrandt, is he washed? Is he just getting into dumb stuff? Should I be overthinking this, or is this it? Is this who this guy's just going to be forever, where he's kind of this 50-50?
You know what
maybe
this fight reminded me of? Do you remember when Timothy Bradley fought Manny Pacquiao the second time? No, the first time. You know, he was his undefeated fighter. He was his, like, strong champion. Like, he was, like, this, like, legit champion.
Ton of confidence. He had
Devin Alexander. He was the king of the division. And then he moves up to fight Manny Pacquiao, and he loses. No, he wins a controversial decision, but in the eyes of the entire public, he lost that fight. So really, he's really coming off of a loss.
More exposed, certainly, than he had ever been.
Yeah. And he fights against that Russian kid in like this epic war where he gets rocked, and it's almost like he's trying to prove something to the audience. I felt like this was Cody Garbrandt trying to prove something to the audience of like, he wasn't fighting smart. It was more like he was kind of trying to redeem himself in his own mind that he is that motherfucker. And when he went in there swinging, even me, because of the marketing that I see, I thought that Cody Garbrandt was going to knock out Munhoz. I thought it was stupid for Munhoz to slug with Garbrandt. But man, was I wrong. And we are all humans. And man, did he look mortal.
He looked really mortal. You know, it's a side of him we just didn't see on his come up, on his rise. This is 3 knockout losses in a row. And it turns out knockouts don't really help your retardation. He's not, for a guy who is making bad decisions, knockouts on top of that don't really help. And I just think this is going to be who he is from here moving on. And he's been a little bit exposed that if you can get him swinging, he is available for big counter shots, especially that sweeping left hook. Hook him from the left, Jesse. The left. Anything else about this night of fights from the UFC?
Nope. But you know what? There was a fight that happened that same night that we paid no attention to. And rightfully so, based on the information that was given to us. So we had Arislan de Lara, one of the greatest boxers of his generation. But now he's a little bit slowed down. He gets hit a lot more than he used to. His legs aren't what they used to, so he doesn't run around the ring like once before. But he still has incredible technique. And he was going to fight against a guy who has been unimpressive as a professional, but he is known as the guy who defeated Errol Spence Jr. He beat him pretty well, even so that Errol Spence Jr. had to come out and make an excuse of, I was up late playing Madden, I have an addiction to playing video games, and that's why I look so bad in that fight. Which, come on.
it's almost an answer so shitty where it's like, I believe it. You know what I mean? Nobody's gonna lie and say that.
So or Brian Castagna,
he's fucking trans hookers. You know, he's just trying to cover up for something horrible. It's one of the two.
So Brian Castaño versus Arislandi Lara was actually a fantastic fight. Brian Castaño really established himself as a real player in the division at 154 pounds. I'm excited to see him. I would love to see him fight against somebody like what's the name of that young kid? Jaime Munguia.
The Mexican motherfucker.
Would be a fantastic fight. Did you have an opportunity to see this fight?
I did. It was a fucking fantastic fight. Lara has finally slowed down enough where he is snipeable. Catano was able to land more shots on Lara than I've seen almost anybody but Jarrett Hurd do. It was unbelievable. Does it kind of downgrade the Jarrett Hurd win, though, that he was able to get on Lara? Because now it looks almost like a Lara thing instead.
I think a little bit. I think we're overestimating Hurd right now, and we're underestimating Charlos, but I think they're basically on the same level. Because before their last two fights, we would have definitely made Jarrett Hurd the underdog in that fight. Now, if we're going to put Jermell Charlo versus Hurd, we're going to give Hurd the preference. So I think it's deceiving to judge him on that fight.
It's a recency bias, right? Yeah, we're falling into the recency bias. It's definitely true. It was a fantastic fight. Catano definitely earned himself, you know, eyes on his next couple fights. And Arislandi Lara, I think there's a ton of guys in that division who would love to fight him right now. Because he has a bigger name, because he's been around, or at least he has a very respected name amongst the people who are in the know. And you can cash in when he's maybe not that premium prime guy that he once was, when he's not.
And, you know, we have to kind of stop calling certain people champions. I get that he has a title, this Castaño guy, but he's the WBA regular champion.
It has regular in the name. Go fuck yourself. If there's any qualifier on it, it doesn't really count, does it?
Yeah, like the real champion, the world champion of the WBA is Jarrett Swift-Hurd. He's the champion. There's no reason to have like some interim champion or some other champion. Like, he is the champion. So whatever this belt is, I don't personally count it.
No, definitely not. And I don't think it'll, if you reel off champions the way, it's not going to really count. But yeah, I'm 100% in lockstep with you, Jesse. I agree. Unanimous.
So how did you end up scoring this fight, actually? It ended up being called a draw.
I think a draw is actually really warranted here. I scored it about even myself, which is a very frustrating thing over 12 rounds. But it sure does seem like we could do an odd number and avoid a lot of these, but here we are. and I thought the fight that – do fucking 11. I'm fine with 11. I know I can figure it out after 11. I think the guys will fight like 1%. I just don't get it.
It's the dumbest thing ever. We had 15 rounds.
It's so fucking stupid. It's so fucking stupid. Do 11 or do 13. Don't do 12. It doesn't fucking make any sense. Do 9. I usually know who's going to win after 9. I'm good. I can fucking figure it out. Whatever. But to me, yes, even fight after 12. What'd you have?
I had a draw.
Tough not to. Should they run it back?
No, I don't think they should run it back, but I would love to see them against other people.
For sure. It's going to make the division 1% better moving forward, a little bit brighter, a little bit more money in the division, which is always a good thing. Jesse, let's get into some of this news that came out over the weekend. Mirko Krokop, over the last week, has announced that he is retiring from MMA because of a stroke that he had after his most recent fight, a victory over Roy Nelson. And considering all the like blood thinners and steroids and hormones this guy must be on, for him to have a stroke is incredible. Mirko Krokop goes out on a 10-fight win streak. Enormous MMA legend, one of the best heavyweights of all time. What do you think?
I think it's long overdue that he's retired. I thought he should have retired maybe around the early 2000s, maybe about 10 years ago. I think he should have retired. In his prime, he had one of the greatest careers. I mean, if you look at K1, he was a finalist in K1. He had an epic victory over Bob Sapp, and Bob Sapp was the scariest person on the planet. No one saw it coming. He just punched Bob Sapp one time, broke his cheekbone, and he started crying. It was really weird. Because now we know Bob Sapp is vulnerable. Back then, he was this scary monster. Gets hit one time, starts crying, like just openly weeping in front of like the Tokyo Dome, pay-per-view all over the world being seen. Damnedest thing I've ever seen.
That was pretty crazy, man. Please keep going.
Then he moves on to K1. Then he moves on to Pride. You know, we don't have very high hopes for a guy who's mostly a striker, and he produces one of the most devastating finishing moves I've ever seen. He had a finishing move. He literally had a Sweet Chin Music finisher. He somehow got a way to set up every single MMA fighter to move to the his left hand, to move to the right side and head kick the shit out of them. And then it became even more dangerous than doing that same hit to the leg and broke that one Japanese dude's leg.
He transcended sports. He knocked out WWE champion Alberto Del Rio.
Yeah, it was absolutely insane. And we got to see probably one of the most, I say the top MMA fight of its time against Krokov versus Fedor. Like, that was a highly anticipated fight on New Year's Eve. The big New Year's show. It was fantastic. We were fever pitch when he won the Grand Prix and he was coming to the UFC. And then we saw mortality, and that always puzzled me because he lost to Gabriel Gonzaga.
Now, Gonzaga's a very tough guy. Let's not say that he's not. And they had a rematch that was also very tough. But I think there was that UFC adjustment of getting drug tested. I think there was that UFC adjustment of no more medium fights where you fight guys who are wearing masks and guys who really probably don't belong in there with you. Everybody is going to belong in there with you, and you're going to do this three or four times a year, two or three times a year. I think it's a grind that it got to Mirko pretty early on.
Do you remember that one time he fought that guy who he was a training partner of Fedor, and then he fought like Fedor's brother? And it was like all these like people that were just like related to Fedor in some kind of way. Like, you're not going to get that in the UFC. In the UFC, you're going to get Fedor.
Yeah, you get just right to him. You're not going to get his boxing coach and then his second cousin and then some guy he watched The Sopranos with. No, you get right to him.
It was a good build-up, though. It was a very boxing-like build-up to bring him to fight against Fedor.
It was fantastic the way that the story of Krokop is like the story of Pride. You know what I mean? He kind of was the face of Pride, even though Fedor was the champion. More people associated with Krokop because of that big
Fedor
kick.
Fedor was one of those weird champions that would fight on the opening. He'd fight on the undercard. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that was weird. Because he would fight bums. He would fight like Zulazinho, who you know, deserved to be on a fucking TLC show about weight loss, not in a heavyweight championship fight. It fucking sucked.
So the WBC has ordered something that sucks. The WBC ordered Deontay Wilder versus Dominic Brazil now that Tyson Fury has left us to go to ESPN. How do you feel about this fight?
I mean, Wilder's going to go in and blast his fucking doors off again is how I feel. It's disappointing that everything seemed to be lining up right for this heavyweight division to have Wilder Fury 2, and then Joshua's right there for whatever happens next, and then, no, we're not getting any of that, we're just moving along. Deontay Wilder's going to take a big step back and blow the back walls out of Dominic Brazil one more time.
I'm hearing this is going to be pay-per-view.
There's no fucking way. And nobody's going to buy that on pay-per-view. Will they? Deontay Wilder is pretty popular, but I can't see that.
The reason it might be pay-per-views because Deontay Wilder had to turn down a really big ESPN deal to get this fight to happen because, you know, his promoter and like his alliances with Showtime and everything. So they said that they were going to pay him every single bit that he was going to make against Tyson Fury to fight Dominic Brazil.
It's a good deal for Wilder. His money isn't going to get too much taller from here unless he can KO Fury and Joshua back to back, but big paycheck, not a lot of risk. I get it from Deontay Wilder's standpoint, but fuck, is it frustrating as a boxing fan to see shit like this? Speaking of seeing shit like this, no, please let me know about this next story.
Gervonta Davis was at Tyson's Corner Mall and gets in a scuffle with a guy at an ATM machine.
That he did. Gervonta Davis. By the way, like a half hour from here. Like, right,
I drive by regularly.
Oh yeah, regularly, all the time. There's a mic that goes on there every Monday. It's unbelievable how right up in my face this is. It's like when I hear about, like, it's like when people start making fun of Dan Nanen on Twitter, and it's like, I've known about Dan Nanen for so long, or when somebody starts making, like, Tom Myers jokes or something, and it's like, yeah. No, you guys don't understand. I literally am Facebook friends with Tom Myers. Did you hear about this Maryland state senator who, like, called PG County N-word land or something?
Yes.
Did you know that's, like, Tom Myers' best friend?
Really?
Yeah, he, like, fucking, like, endorsed her so heavily, like, in this big, long Facebook essay right before the election and shit. If you don't, guys, that's don't know who crazy. Tom Myers is, he's a D.C.-based, Baltimore-based comedian who is the worst comedian of all time and just, like, a psychopath. It's unbelievable. I can't even get into too much of it.
You know what I respect for him? He's business savvy.
That's what everybody says about comedians who suck, though. Damn, he hustles.
Like, man, every single show, no matter what open mic it is, he has a DVD, which is one of the worst DVDs I've ever seen in my life. She gets
what's
gigs.
It called? Make America Innate Again, which is not the word. He means inane, not innate. He fucking made a typo in his own fucking album title.
I love his videos on YouTube where, like, he posts them, like, no one's laughing.
And he's bombing. Yeah, he's bombing his tits off. And Tom's like, come here and give me a thumbs up. Subscribe to the channel. No, but if I'm going to kill time on YouTube, it's going to be watching Uncle Tony videos.
He has videos?
Uncle Tony video? Oh my God, Jesse. Oh, call in sick from work tomorrow. Yeah, Uncle Tony has turned, like, every single one of his, like, weird... Well, I can't believe we talked about Hotep shit. We didn't talk about Uncle Tony. yeah, it's an unbelievable, like, DC stand-up comedian who only dresses in big, like, Steve Harvey rental suits that, like, don't quite fit. Don't let him hear me say that. And he's always saying, yeah. Like, every time he says, yeah.
No, my favorite thing is he says his own name randomly.
Uncle Tony. Yeah. I used to host this open mic. He would show up every fucking week. And I drove myself insane just listening to his bits about how, like, mouse be white people, but rats is black people. Like, it was the most unbelievable shit.
Man, yeah.
Oh, yeah, guys, so Gervonta Davis
it's
got
fantastic.
And, yeah,
this
you
is
gotta
a
fight
look, podcast.
You gotta look up Gervonta, or you gotta look up Gervonta Davis. I don't give a shit, but you gotta look up Uncle Tony. Gervonta Davis, he beats the shit out of somebody at Tyson's Corner Mall. Apparently, he didn't make weight before this, which sucks. That's another black mark on his record. This feels like one of those things. It doesn't really change our opinion of Gervonta. It's not really going to affect that much, in my opinion. Am I wrong in this?
Yeah.
I mean, they're just going to make this go away.
I'm waiting for him to pop up at open mic. He's so local, it's not even funny.
What if Gervonta beats up Tom Myers?
You know, people at my gym run into Gervonta Davis at the club regularly.
That's hilarious. Of course they do. He's getting some of that Joseph Benavidez treatment.
Like,
it's always the young guy.
I don't want to sound snooty, but he definitely hangs out in a lot of places where people who make $30,000 a year hang out.
So, some hood rat traps?
Yeah.
Gets into some hood rat traps? That doesn't surprise me at all. Gervonta Davis. I mean, I've seen the guy in the ring, and, you know, he's only hitting threes and fours. And that probably carries over. Once in a while, he'll throw a five, but maybe it doesn't get much higher than that. Polly Malignaggi, Polly Paper Knuckles, is going to fucking fight in bare knuckle boxing. He signed a 2-year deal with the Bare Knuckle Boxing League that is probably leading up to a super fight with Artem Lobov, a fight that only exists for people to make memes. What do you think about Polly signing with Bare Knuckle?
To be honest, this has been a dream of mine for many years. I've personally been fantasizing about seeing Polly Malignaggi in a bare knuckle fight my entire life, basically since I was born. So I'm actually very happy and very excited that one of sports' biggest moments that we've all really been anticipating is finally going to happen.
The moment when his hands fall off in the ring. Because that's like on the table.
2003 because of his hands.
Yes, he had to completely change his boxing style. Polly Paper Knuckles is somehow going to try to bare knuckle box. I don't know what he expects to happen. I don't know why no one is in his corner telling him, like, hey, this is like an Alanis Morissette lyric. This isn't really like a fight plan. I don't know why you're getting into the most ironic league of all time. It's unreal, Jesse, that Polly is going to do this and set up a fight with fucking Artem Lobov, a guy who has a reach, I'm not kidding, of like 22 inches. His arms could not be any shorter compared to the rest of his body. It's unreal.
I love all the memes of Artem Lobov being the GOAT, the greatest MMA fighter of all time. They're hilarious. If you ever get bored, look that up on social media.
They're good stuff. Undefeated. My guy. Jesse, let's preview some stuff, right?
Yes.
Oh, no, there's one more fight I wanted to mention right before we hopped on the sticks. It got announced. Paulo Costa is out versus Yoel Romero, but we're going to see a rematch, Yoel versus Jacare. You like the rematch?
Yoel versus Jacare. I was really anticipating that when it happened, and it didn't really live up to the hype.
No, the first fight kind of sucked, but I'm hoping that this might be an Arislandi Lara kind of thing, where now they're both a little bit more hittable. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would like that.
That would be cool,
man,
right?
That was like, at that time, I was anticipating that the way today we think of, like, Ferguson versus Khabib.
True. Yeah, absolutely.
I think I called it Godzilla versus King Kong is the way.
Was that like podcast. Right when we started the podcast? That was the first episode.
Yeah,
and we had to fucking restart like 7 times.
Yes,
that's why I remember hearing it. It will be stuck in my brain forever. You saying Godzilla versus King Kong?
Because we said it so many times.
We had to say it so many times. It was so shitty. Because I didn't know the fucking software.
You know what it reminds me of? Have you ever seen that that clip on YouTube of when people found out that Milli Vanilli weren't actually singing? And they kept, because the record skipped that, girl, you know it's true.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Girl, you know, and it goes over and over. That's how many times I said Godzilla versus King Kong. I'm talking about Yoel Romero versus Jacare Souza.
Yeah, so for sure, don't say it when we preview it the next time, or I'll fucking put a gun in my mouth. I can't take it anymore. Sean Porter is going to be fighting Ugas. Can you let me know how to say Ugas's first name?
Yordanis.
Yordanis, thank you very much. Yordanis Ugas is taking on Sean Porter. Sean Porter is the resident tough guy in the division here at welterweight. Ugas is a tough up-and-comer, but does he have enough to handle a brawler, a physical Rottweiler like Sean Porter?
Man, this is everything that we thought Anthony Smith versus John Jones was going to be like last week. We have a guy who didn't necessarily have the best career. And I know for like 3 losses in boxing, it's like, come on, Jesse, give him a shot. But he lost to like 2 people who don't even have a Wikipedia page. Like, he really didn't lose to top-level opposition. I mean, the best guy he lost to was Amir Imam, who's a gatekeeper at best.
Not the guys you want to lose to if you want to be beating Sean Porter a couple years later.
But then he turned his career around. I mean, he's been looking fantastic. He's been looking great. He has a great victory over Thomas Delorme. He's looked sensational against Ray Robinson and a few other people. Ray Robinson, a gatekeeper. This is not the pound-for-pound king. This is just a guy who happens to have the same name as he does. But he's fighting against Sean Porter. Like you said, tough competition. Although I'm questioning where Sean Porter's heart is right now, because the rumors is he's going to sneak out of PBC. We're going to start either seeing him. There's a rumor he might be going to the zone for big money. And not just big money, but there's also rumors that he really, really, really doesn't want to fight Errol Spence Jr. So if he could be on a different platform so he can avoid people asking him consistently, hey, are you going to fight Errol Spence Jr.? Are you fighting the winner of Spence versus Garcia? That conversation sounds a little bit easier when it's like, I can't, man. You know, I'm on the zone and, you know, he's on Showtime and, you know, we don't, our promoters don't work well together and, you know, I'm getting paid all this money on this side. It's literally like when you're at the club and they break up the fight and then the security's holding you guys back. You're talking all the shit. It's that. He wants the security to come and pull him back and be like, I beat you up, but this the security holding me back.
He wants a safety blanket. I think that I would be surprised if it affected him in the ring. Sean Porter has always been a really consistent guy in the ring, which has been to his downfall at times. I think he is going to bully up Ugas, and I think he's going to pick up a decision win in this fight. What do you think?
I mean, it's a tough one. Ugas was a 2008 bronze medalist. He looked fantastic. He looked fantastic in the amateurs, and like now he's finally starting to put it together. I think that Ugas is better than Sean Porter, but I think Sean Porter is just grittier, tougher, and he's just persistent. I mean, if skills pay the bills, I give it to Ugas, but I agree with you that I kind of think that he's gonna
force. How about this? Let me put it to you this way. I've heard this, and I think it stands pretty true in jiu-jitsu. I think it can transfer over to boxing sometimes. Skill will beat talent. Will beat skill. What do you think?
I think this is going to be one of those. Will is going to beat skill.
I agree. We potentially could be talking about that same equation right now. Dmitry Bivol is taking on Joe Smith. There's a fight going on at 175, a weight that is dominated by Russians. Joe Smith looks to be the lone American who kind of punches up into that. This is a fight with two bangers, two brawlers, two heavy-handed guys. Not a lot of reason to think this one's going to go all full 12. What do you think looking at this fight, Jesse?
If Bivol's goal was to not fight Eastern Europeans while he's a professional, he's done a great decision by moving to DAZN, because literally the entire freaking weight class is in a different platform, and he's the lone person in DAZN. Luckily, they got him against Joe Smith Jr., because that's a pretty good name at light heavyweight. But he has come out and said that this is his last fight at light heavyweight because the money in DAZN is with him moving down to 168. Now, I looked at the top 10 at 168, and the only person at 168 at DAZN that I would think there's any money in him fighting is Callum Smith Jr. So I think this is setting up him and Callum Smith Jr. I wouldn't be surprised if he'll be in the audience that day.
I think that would be a great idea. Bivol is more polished than Joe Smith in this fight, for sure. And I think him at 168, if he can get there, it's kind of like, I mean, he's not going up 25 pounds here. So going down 7 is going to be really his only option. I think Bivol versus Smith is a great, great fight.
I think Bivol is going to be too much skill for Joe Smith Jr. I mean, he's always dangerous with the hands. Well, obviously it's boxing, but he's always dangerous with the knockout. But I just think it's too slow. I feel like too mechanical. I got Dmitry Bivol in this fight.
That's what it is. I think it's mechanical. I think the Bivol is smoother. I think the Bivol has better ability to set and take advantage of traps. We're going to see. I don't know. But give me Bivol if I had to guess. I wouldn't bet on it. I might bet on Sean Porter. And I think I'm going to bet on this next fight. And I think I'm going to bet on the underdog, Black Beast. Derek Lewis coming into this fight is an underdog against Junior Dos Santos. Junior Dos Santos has kind of figured out how to be that older fighter in the division, where he is very stubborn about his strength, which is boxing. He still has good enough power. He still has decent enough speed. But I feel like from what I'm understanding from the Junior Dos Santos camp, there's a lot of talk about pulling Derek Lewis into later rounds, trying to gas him out. I don't think that's going to work. Derek Lewis is a guy, he has a 4th round knockout win in another main event he's already been in. This is a guy who doesn't get stopped. This is a guy who knocked out Volkov with like 3 seconds left. Jesse, is it a mistake to try to gas out Derek Lewis just because he walks to the cage while eating fried food? It wouldn't shock you at all if Derek Lewis walking, if they like did one of those like backstage at the UFC cameras and he was eating just like edible underwear, but like not attached to a woman.
That's hilarious.
That would very much fit with him. Like, you know, he just likes them. They just taste good.
I wouldn't be surprised if either one won this fight. I would actually lean towards Junior Dos Santos, but I would love to see Derek Lewis win this fight for the division. Dos Santos just ain't the guy he used to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best example of soul taking in MMA, unfortunately, is Cain Velasquez versus Junior Dos Santos. That
you know what
that
fight I'm really excited
he was
about?
Never
here.
The same. Hit me. What fight?
The return of the Barbarian. Tim Bosch will be fighting. He's actually opening up the card against Omar Akhmedov.
Omar Akhmedov, that guy's actually pretty tough. He has put together some good wins. He's coming off of a first round TKO win, I think. Tim Bosch is
majority draw.
Are you calling majority draw?
No,
oh, that's what it was in the last fight. I apologize.
He's coming off of two decisions, one split decision, and a majority draw.
Well, I was fucking wrong. Why are you excited for this fight?
Because Tim Bosch has lost more than anyone I've ever known that's still on the roster.
It's crazy, right? And it's not like he's in super exciting fights every time. He just has, like, exciting finishes that lend themselves really well to these UFC packages.
He lost his last fight. Let's see.
Tim Bosch is a throwback to an old UFC. It's like finding out that somebody still smokes crystal meth. You know what I mean? Like, damn, that's old school. You must have been around a long time.
Dude, he was losing fights in the UFC back in 2008.
Yeah, straight up.
Like, no, it's not like he has like a lot of like wins. Like,
you know who else is on this card? Big Ben Rothwell is finally back after USADA suspension. And he is back on this card. Ben Rothwell was the grizzled, out-of-the-way veteran when Cain Velasquez was a young pup prospect. And now Cain is retired from too much ring damage and cage age. And Ben Rothwell is still here. He's just going to go forever, Jesse. I can't wait.
Let's find that Sambo kid.
You're going to have to. Sambo the martial art. Say it. Sambo the martial art.
The martial art.
Thank you. That'd be so fucked. He's fighting that Sambo kid. No, Derek Lewis is in the main event.
I didn't even think about that.
As a white person, I have to be very attuned. All right. So in the main event, I'm going to predict Derek Lewis by knockout. I don't know who you're going to take.
I got Dos Santos.
Right on. Knockout? Decision? Probably decision, right? It's fucking hard to stop Black Beast. I'm going to stop while I'm ahead. All right, Jesse, anything else for the week?
No, that's it for me.
Put yourself over. Let the people know how to get a hold of you.
Find me on social media. Find me on Instagram at Jay Rivas Comedy and on Facebook, Jay Rivas.
I love it. For everybody here at the show, please like, subscribe, all that good stuff. We really appreciate it. You can find me online. Just search my name. I'll probably fucking come up. We will be back next week, back on the block with all the most exciting previews, recaps, all the news we can talk about here on the block.